Welcome to the B&B Movies Podcast. I'm your host, Michael, and today is a special day because it is episode 100 of the podcast. What beer am I pairing with the 100th episode? Well, it's a big episode, so I went and got a big beer, barrel-aged Big Chef from Court Avenue Brewing Company in Des Moines, Iowa. They gave this to me, and you're going to ask, what is barrel-aged Big Chef? It's a barrel-aged barley wine. Aged 15 months in Weller bourbon barrels. That's what a big barley wine needs, is 15 months in bourbon barrels. I'm not complaining. This thing's ridiculously tasty. And the chef very well may be trying to kill me. It's 15%. It's good, though. Really dark fruit, figs, and wonderful tasty, tasty things going on here. They're not trying to hide the booze one bit. Not at all. This thing is hitting you hard with real good dates and fruit leather. It's just awesome. So, 100th episode. The first thing I want to do is I just want to say thanks to my former partner, Jason. He brought this project to me, and I remember he has a background in marketing, and he came to me and he said, I got an idea. We would get together, he and Jenny and me and Jane, we'd get together and hang out. Jason and I would always talk about beer and movies. We both had a passion for movies. And he said, I got this idea. It's a podcast I'd like to do, and I want you to do it with me, and it's called B&B Movies. And my first reaction was, aren't there thousands of those out there? I love it, but isn't it kind of a saturated market? And again, his background in marketing, he had done the research, and he said, Michael, there's 1,000 beer podcasts. There's 1,000 B-movie podcasts. There isn't one that combines the two. And I said, I'm in. And my background, I have a degree in cinema from the University of Iowa. I worked in two breweries. I worked at pubs and restaurants where beer was given the respect it deserves, I think. Great beer menus, and it just made sense, the two of us. So we set off on this little journey. And, you know, then you're figuring out, how do we want to do this? What's the structure? How's the format going to run? And, you know, a few things there. We started out not knowing exactly how many episodes we could do at a time. I think at one point I said, well, could we crank out 4 in a session? That's way too many. I'll tell you, we did 2 at a time. And that seemed to be the sweet spot because, believe it or not, it does expend energy. And after 2 episodes, you're talking, you know, having a couple beers, contrary to what people think, we don't just get trashed and talk about a movie. We put a lot of work into it prior to recording. We'd show up with notes. We're real geeks about it. But we wanted to run a serious, fun podcast, I guess, is the best way to put it. And went back and listened to the introduction episode. And right off the bat, we were so full of crap. It was pretty great because we're going, oh, we're not gonna do Mystery Science Theater movies. Well, episode 4, one of the first things we ever recorded was Laser Blast, which Mystery Science Theater did. Episode 45, The Brain, that was done, I guess, by Mystery Science Theater. That one I didn't know. I think it was a later episode. And then episode 55, Star Crash. And then another thing I noticed in that first episode, which in some ways I could wish I could go back and redo or go back and just make disappear. It isn't easy always listening to the early stuff when we were starting out and we just didn't have our sea legs yet. We said we weren't going to do Phantasm. And in episode 40, we did Phantasm. I don't know why we ever said we wouldn't do Phantasm. That's one of both of our favorite movies. It was going to be done at some point. Then we come in, you know, we do the introduction episode, and then it's kind of big, you know, what are going to be our first 2 episodes, you know? What are we going to bring? What am I going to bring? Because, you know, we each bring a movie, and I brought Metal Storm, you know, I love that movie. I saw it when I was a kid, and he brought Laser Blast. And so that's kind of where we just kick off. And sometimes I go back and look at early episodes when I'm pulling things I really loved that I wish I had waited, because then when we got a little more comfortable, a little smoother at doing it, you know, I can't go back and really redo a movie when I did it when I did, really was just not sure what I was doing. And one of the things, you know, I did is try to get myself, I mean, I could probably do this podcast the rest of my life and never have to watch a new movie. I mean, from age and being a kid when you're just constantly watching movies, I've got such a backlog of movies I've seen. But so that was one of the things that we tried to do, was find new things. I was always out looking. You know, and today it's pretty great. It used to be you go to the video store, which I do miss. I used to love going to the the video store, but now, you know, you can go online and you find some gems. I personally think more often than not, you find duds. So getting back to movies I hadn't seen that I like enough that I would probably go back to, episode 16, this is a weird movie. This one just sticks with me. It's Ghost Keeper, which is covers your New Year's Eve. If you're looking for a New Year's Eve horror movie, you got your New Year's Eve bingo. You got your horror movie calendar, holiday calendar. It's just a quiet movie. I don't know. It sticks with me. At the time, I was very ambivalent about it. I didn't know if I'd watch it again. It's kind of boring. It's supposed to be a Wendigo, and it's just the world's worst Wendigo movie. But there's something in the cinematography and the tone of it that just kind of sticks with me. I go back to some of the images. A very quiet movie. Another one is The Alien Dead, number 18. Fred Olen Ray's, I believe it was his first one. It's by no means this, you know, stunningly well-made movie, but it was a young man's first movie, and just going the backstory of it, where he would just be able to shoot on weekends, getting friends and family, just kind of anybody, are you available? Are you available to come be a space zombie type thing? It's a testament to independent filmmaking and a young filmmaker just starting out is what I like about that. And it's funny. Some of it's unintentional humor, but it's pretty damn funny about space zombies, and they're eating all the gators, and it's a weird one. Warlock Moon, number 25. That was a Jason pick, and that was another one. It was very dreamlike, surreal. You couldn't say one way or the other if this was a supernatural movie or just kind of your garden variety cannibal movie. It's an odd one. There's just some really off-putting, unsettling scenes, and a really cool ending. That's a good one. I enjoyed that. Another one that the highest quality, they didn't have a budget, but I thought they just pulled it off well. Number 42 is Messiah of Evil. Now this is really came out as a movie I loved. This is a Lovecraftian type deal where a woman goes to see what's going on with her dad up the coast in California, and she goes to this town, and kind of it's a zombie movie. It's just surreal, and has another one that's like nightmarish qualities, dreamlike, where you're not sure what's going on. And the theater scene is one of the best horror movie scenes I think ever. Then the dad's house is just the set is very, very cool and creepy. That's a great one. And finally, number 52, the Living Dead at Manchester Morgue. If you see that title, how the hell are you not going to watch it? Am I right? You have to watch that. That's another zombie one. It's the 70s, so it also brings in an environmental consciousness quality to it that I enjoyed. It was supposed to be in Britain, but it's a Spanish made and filmed in Italy. It's a whole thing, but super downbeat with a bigoted cop who hates hippies. But that's a zombie movie that had a lot going for it. Every coin has two sides. The side of movies I hadn't seen that I'm going to watch again, I would like to watch again. And there's, of course, then movies that I hadn't seen before and I won't see again. And it's pretty evenly split. Number 6, 1990, The Bronx Warriors. That was a me pick. And I thought about this. I was actually this morning, I was just on a hike, and I wondered if I should strike this one, because I said, there's a chance I would watch this again. But I think it would have to be if somebody else said, dude, let's drink beer and watch this crap movie, because it is so bad. The John Carpenter should have sued them for the opening credits alone. It was just such a ripoff of like Escape from New York. Although I do have to say, watching Trash, the main character walk, is almost worth watching it again. It's fascinating to me that Fred Williamson took him and redid his walk, because he said he walked like so unmanly that he had to teach him how to walk, and this is the result. That's pretty great. Not a good movie at all, I don't know. Number 13, The Being. That was another me. And Holiday, for your holiday horror. If you're looking for Easter, this was almost going to be called Easter Sunday, and it's set in potato country. That means big money. That's an environmental movie, and it's just bad. I mean, Martin Balsam's in there. I think he was at a low point in his career. and he's trying to convince people, like, you know, we to get rid of our radioactive waste, we should just dump it in your drinking water. I'm not a scientist, but that, to me, just seems like one of the just most astoundingly stupid ideas ever. And of course, they've been illegally dumping this stuff, and then it ends up, you know, mutating someone and creating the world's worst monster. And there's cyanide tanks for some reason, and it's then it goes alien, and that's a bad one. That was a rough one. And I'll be getting, you know, something like that in a minute, talk a little bit more about vetoing movies and how that works. Number 19, The Seventh Victim, just boring. Watching paint dry would be probably, you know, easier to do than watch The Seventh Victim again. The world's least scary satanic worshipers. I didn't care for that one much at all. It was a tough watch. The Love-Ins. This brought out such an ugly side of me. This is supposed to be some hippie movie, but it just insults the hippies and everything about them, and it's condescending. And it was a New Glarus beer that I can't believe I wasted on that movie. I really, really grew to dislike that movie a lot. It wasn't entertaining. The music was dumb. It wasn't well shot. The message was horrifyingly condescending and just wrongheaded. So, and 45 The Brain, mentioned that earlier because that was a Mystery Science Theater. We said we weren't going to do those movies, and there we are. And The Brain, I tried to make some, you know, bad case for it, that it was, you know, Cronenberg, because it was a Canadian horror movie and had some Cronenberg, like, you know, elements, but it wasn't influenced. It was aping Cronenberg. That's a real bad one. Number 51, The Baby. I'd heard about this movie, and it's just dumb. That's all I got to say about The Baby. It's weird. It tries so hard to be weird. It's one of those, if you watch it once, you'll never need to see it again, because there's nothing good enough about it to come back to. The Undertaker, number 59, Joe Spinell's last movie that really was never finished, probably should have never been started. Just not a good movie. Pretty gruesome, pretty unpleasant. And then number 60, Something Weird. Wow. This was a turd. This could have been my least favorite movie we did. It was just awful. Herschel Gordon Lewis, who I was never known to make an actual, like, good movies, but what was so breathtakingly bad about this is about his 18th or 19th movie, and on every level it was stupid, bad, and poorly written. I could hand cameras to 10-year-olds and probably find something that made more sense and was better, more well done. 10-year-olds, crap. I know a 2-year-old I give a camera to and come up with something more interesting. That movie was bad. So bad. I almost want you guys to go watch it, so I'm not alone in the badness. But that kind of brings me to something where we never did this. And at no point did we call the other one and say, look, the movie you picked is too bad, or I can't do this, I don't want to do it. But we were both close. And for me, Something Weird was one of those. I think we said we'd give each other a veto, but there were a couple times. There were a couple times you'd sit there, because you watch a movie. I mean, we try to watch the movies, you know, at a minimum of 4 times. And you get to a point on some of these where you're going, wow. You know, you pick up the phone, you go start texting. This movie, I think once he did, My Bloody Valentine. He couldn't find much to say. He's like, do we really want to do this? And I said, dude, this is a cool movie. We're going to do it. And I think we talked about, he talked about Canadian tax shelter movies or something. But that was the closest I think we ever came, was he questioned that one. But Something Weird was when I almost pulled the trigger and said, yeah, let's not do this one. So the other component to all of this is the beer, of course, which after we did several episodes, I went back, we had a get together, we had a little meeting and a sit down, just kind of review and like what we're going to do going forward. Let's do some special episodes. We did a film noir, we did slasher movies, possession movies, zombie movies. And then that was about the point I said, I'm going to start going to breweries and asking them to give us beer for episodes, sponsor an episode. And the response was so positive. I counted it up, and it was 56 breweries have given me beer for episodes. And I can't thank them enough. I'm not going to sit here and name all 56. You can look and see. I always mention that when the beer is provided by a brewery, really, it's a lot of fun. Even Jane, who does not like beer, she loves going to breweries because there's such a good vibe. But it was a great day, you know, plan a little trip and contact a brewery. Then the response has been wonderful, and I can't thank all of them enough for supporting this little endeavor. And it's great fun because they'll talk about movies, and you find there's this great crossover of beer geek and movie geek. And on many occasions, you know, they'd say, "What movie are you pairing with it?" And then sometimes I'd let them pick. One that comes to mind is Mumford wanted to put their fittingly Schwartz beer paired with Night of the Creeps, which was fittingly. There hasn't been a bad beer in an episode, in my opinion. And I think I can't say the same thing about the movies. There have been some bad movies with some great beer. There were more than a couple times I thought I should just get some Miller Lite and throw that on with this bad movie. There are some I do want to just call out. Future Dreams, that was the first beer in our introduction episode. That was great. That was Highland Park and Bearded Iris. That's always going to be up there. Episode 24, Carnival of Souls. I paired it with Fieldworks Loretta Belgian Dark Strong Ale. I like that one because I remember Jane and I did a little weekend getaway up in Monterey. There's a fantastic beer scene in Monterey, California. It's a gorgeous area, but there are some really cool breweries. And I looked up this place, Fieldwork, I'd never heard of, and went there and brought some stuff back. And so it just reminds me of a fun road trip. Episode 26, The Girl Can't Help It. That was 310 Blonde from Santa Monica Brewworks, because that was the first brewery that sponsored us. That's my local. Big shout out to Johnny. He hooked me up with that. Jack, Carl, Lauren. 30, the Colossus of Rhodes, Millstreams, Millpocalypse, the Belgian Quad. Big shout out to Rebecca and Chris. They hooked me up with a care package of beers. So that was the first sponsorship I had from my home state. So that meant a lot. They've been hugely supportive. So one of the things I love is I've had so many breweries when I go home that have hooked me up, and they're way into it, just like out here in California. Heater Allen, I reached out to them and they said sure, and they shipped me some beer. I thought that was really cool because just writing them, you know, it's one thing to reach out or to go to a place, say I'm going to be there and we can talk, but these guys said, yeah, we'll mail you beer. And I paired Mediator Doppelbach with Enter the Ninja. 80s, big time for the ninja world. We were all walking around with many throwing stars in our pockets. The reception has been great. I'm not excluding anyone, and I apologize. I just don't think sitting here naming, going through 56 breweries is actually a practical thing. I don't know if anybody would want to listen to an episode of me just going, these guys, thank them for this, you know. It's just a big blanket thank you, and I just picked a handful. One of the things I learned was watch when you're doing two episodes. I realized sometimes I'd be, you know, when you're into your second episode and you look across the table and you can tell that your partner is a couple sheets to the wind, you review the beers you pick, because not everyone can hold their beer. And maybe, you know, doing a Belgian quad and then in the second episode doing an Imperial IPA might not be the best idea. You kind of got to mix it up. So I learned that lesson. But then I just thought, what were some of the best pairings? There were things that I just went, this is too perfect. This is the greatest pairing. So, you know, some of my, I think are the best pairings of the first 99 episodes. Episode 35, Vanishing Point, a Thinking Man's Car Chase movie. Love it. So, so cool. And I had All Gas, No Brakes. I got that from a union. Thanks, guys. And it's a double IPA. But it just fits perfectly. All Gas, No Brakes, Vanishing Point, the on the nose. And then episode 51, Tarantula Hill IPA with Kingdom of the Spiders. They're a great brewery in Thousand Oaks. Yeah, that was one that I was not going to do Kingdom of the Spiders unless I could get something from Tarantula Hill. The Q, Barrel Aged Stout, Ogopogo. Thank you. That was fun to get out to San Gabriel and visit Ogopogo. That's another cool spot. All of the all of their beers are named after cryptids, which is the best idea ever. That was paired with Q, the winged serpent. I don't know if you could get it, you know, Q. That was a great pairing. And there are others, but these were the ones that when I was going through the list, these jumped out at me as too good. As I thank all these breweries that gave me beer, it also brings me, you know, last couple of years have been tough on breweries, and going through it, there are some breweries that are gone now, and the ones that really they're tough for me are Mumford, Wing Walker, Wild Barrel, Yorkshire Square, kind of closed. They sort of sold to someone else. They sold to Project Barley, who were also sponsors of an episode. Cool spot. Love the peeps. And Ja, shout out to Ja and at Project Barley. They stepped in, but it was also sad because Yorkshire Square, they couldn't make it, so they had to step away. But the space is still there. It's just under new ownership. And Strand is gone. And then Jason picked a beer up from Bang Brewery. We bought it. It was not a sponsorship, but Bang Brewery in Las Vegas. That was Johnny Cool. And they've closed. So it's tough. Support your local brewery. It's not just a phrase. Jane, not a beer drinker, and that's fine. She loves the community of it, and that to me is one of the great things. Even if you're not a beer drinker or a drinker at all, breweries, they create jobs for a community. Breweries are often doing fundraisers and events that are for the community-minded. I think breweries to me now are what public houses used to be in Britain, where it's a gathering place for the community. You know, if you go to a brewery, you're always going to see families there. And so you're not just losing a place that makes beer. A community loses an important thing. So it's a sad thing and not to mention that some of these breweries were some of my favorite breweries. Like, these were making fantastic. It's not just a loss for, you know, this little beer community. It's a loss for just people who love well-crafted things. I mean, Wind Walker and Monrovia, we recorded Monrovia. That's where Jason is from. And so we had our studio up there, and we would record, and then we'd go to Wing Walker and have beers afterwards. And we got to know Dave, and he was a huge supporter and fan, and it was heartbreaking to see it close. So, as always, support your local brewery. This is brought to you by the Beer and Bee Movies podcast. That kind of, you know, that's going to bring me to the end of, like, looking back. It was fun to go back and listen. Some of it is a little cringy. Some of it is very cool. Going forward, it's going to be me. I have some guest hosts. I'm going to have a guest host coming up next couple of episodes. It's going to be fun. It's going to be sort of an 80s vibe for the next couple. So I'll have some other guest hosts going forward. It'll be me. And right now it's me and the Barrel Age Big Chef, which is a damn good thing. Port Avenue Brewing, thank you guys. I've never had the original, the Big Chef, which is just the barley wine. And what sort of mad scientist says, let's take a really potent barley wine and drop it into barrels for 15 months. Anyway, that kind of wraps up the 100th episode of the Beer and Bee Movies podcast. I'll tell you, like, subscribe wherever you can. Leave a comment, a review, wherever you listen, wherever it's available. You can follow me on Instagram, Threads, Facebook. Check out the website. And as always, support your local breweries. This is the Beer and Bee Movies podcast. I'm Michael. I'm a man.